Jesus loves him, but the rest of us think he's a putz. It's the Drew Marshall Show.
Ridiculously fascinated with why people get into believing something and why they leave. Those two things are phenomenally interesting to me.
Is that a segue into this guest?
Can't get anything by Tim the Tool.
I'm smarticle. No, it is. I mean, that's one of the guiding principles of this show is...
Is segue?
Messy spirituality.
Oh, I see,
and changing and in and out and why and absolutely.
Authenticity, vulnerability, teachability, the three biggest things in a human being. And this gal, she's got it all, folks. Emily Pearson, she's an actress. She's a producer. She's an ex-Mormon. She's the author of Dancing with Crazy. Check this out. At the age of 8 years old, I was baptized an official fifth generation member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I was 12 years old when I learned my dad, whom I adored, was gay. 16 years old when he died of AIDS in our home. 18 years old when my mother's book, Goodbye, I Love You, was published by Random House. 25 years old when I knowingly married a gay man myself in the Salt Lake City Temple. 32 years old when we divorced, 34 when I walked away from the Mormon Church, and 40 when I officially had my name removed from the church records. Well, that's it. We don't need to talk to her.
Nope, we're done.
Emily, thank you so much for your time. Goodbye. Hello? Is she there?
Hi.
Where'd she go?
You are so awesome. That was great. That made me want to take a nap.
Oh, man.
Most of the show is like that for
me. Stop it.
I just mean hearing about my life was like, oh, I need a nap just hearing about it.
No.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. How are you? Hi.
I'm excellent.
Where are you right now? Tell me your surroundings. Well, look around. This sounds really creepy, but just, you know, what are you doing? What's going on?
Well, this is going to be a creepy answer. I'm in my bedroom.
Whoa! Don't want to know.
Because it's the quietest place in my house. There's teenagers and a dog and neighbors, and so I'm just kind of locked in my little bedroom where it's quiet, and it's a beautiful fall day here in Utah.
What are your children's names?
Christian is my oldest son. He is 19, and Tara is 17.
When Christian was a younger version of himself, did he ever have friends say to him that, Christian, your mom has got it going on?
Yeah, how do I answer that without sounding in a way I do not want to sound at all? They've both gotten that, and they've both absolutely hated it.
Well, the reason I brought that up is because I saw some weird video where you answered the door and there was a tongue at the door.
Oh, that Aurabrush commercial I did. Yeah.
It was pretty funny.
That was funny. That was a funny little campaign they had going.
Yeah. Was the boy in the commercial your son, or was that
he's just a little actor boy.
He's a stunt son.
Yep. Stunt son. Stunt. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. So, Emily, we need to get into this because the further I dug in looking into your life prior to this interview, the more I realized that we're just not going to have enough time because you got a wacky life.
That is for sure. Hence the Dancing with the Crazy. Yep.
So let's start with the fact that you're Mormon royalty. Aside from the fact you're already a princess and still are, from what I can gather, Mormon royalty. What does that look like? What does that feel like? So an outsider goes, whoa, what's that?
So, Mormon royalty, I guess, would be those of us that grew up being Mormon, and you have a famous, for whatever reason, Mormon parent. Is a general authority, or a famous writer, as in my mom's case, or someone who's very high profile in the Mormon church, you're kind of revered as Mormon royalty, which means in the world of an organization of people that are already oh-so-special, you are the oh-so-special of the oh-so-special.
So, yeah, but you, I mean, we're talking fifth generation stuff? as well? I mean, not just the fact that your mom was this famous author, wrote these poems, and people would walk up to you in the street, and you know, I mean, I love this line, right? Do you know how lucky you are to have a mother like yours?
Yeah.
Are you going to be a famous writer, too, just like your mommy?
Yeah.
It's weird.
Yeah, got that a lot. Yeah, fifth generation, we got, you know, back many generations of those that lace makers in England and from all over the place that heard the call and joined the church and left everything and got in ships and covered wagons and buried their dead kids and somehow made it out to Utah, and here we are.
When did crazy start?
Wow. Oh, well, crazy started for me. You want to just dive into it?
Yep.
Dive into the big crazy. Okay, I was very, very, very young, and my parents had a very open home that was there for healing for many, helping a lot of young Mormon kids get off drugs from the 60s. And so unbeknownst to my parents, several of them were involved in Satanism. That's something that kind of just wacky ritualistic stuff is actually really not all uncommon in, I think, most religions, but in the LDS, certainly my experience. The Mormon temple ceremony is taken, you know, Joseph Smith took it from the Masons. It's not something that he came up with on his own. It's the Masonic ceremony, and he's not the only one that did that. The occult did that, and other people have done that. And so there were some people that were drawn, I think, from Satanism or whatever you want to call it, just people being weird and wacky and crazy, and so they kind of got a hold of me. And so that was my first, not just a little foray, that was a big, fat, ugly dip into the volcano of crazy.
Wait, hold on, what do you mean they got a hold of you?
They abused me. I was abused, and I was involved in rituals that were both including the Mormon temple ceremony and satanic rituals. So I know that that's super, like, sensationalistic, and it's super titillating, and it's like, oh my God, tell us all the details, and it's so ugly and gross, and I just don't go there as far as the details go.
Okay.
I have no room in my life for that kind of ugliness, and the only reason I'm willing to ever talk about it is because it is very interesting, and there are people that have, not just in that area, but all over the place, that have experienced horrifying and unspeakable things that don't know how they can ever get up again. And I am, at this point in my life, I can actually say I am weirdly grateful for that, because it introduced me to the part of myself that is indestructible, and I have a very strong relationship with that part of myself because of that early introduction to all of that. And it's pretty incredible, and it really sucks.
Yeah. I mean, what's the residual impact of being abused as a kid for you?
You can break that down into what's the fallout for someone being sexually abused? What's the fallout for, I guess you just mean for me specifically.
Yeah.
It's all kinds of stuff. But the very typical, don't love yourself, you don't deserve anything, you don't, blah, blah, blah. The biggest thing for me, because of the nature of the abuse, was the lifelong belief that I literally should not be alive. That I absolutely had no right to be alive and awake and on this planet, which is really hard. Is that if that's the kind of the deep foundation root in your brain of what you believe, how can you live your life? But
can you give me permission to ask this question? Which, in other words, will you answer this question? So the question is, you just said I don't deserve to be alive because of the nature of the abuse. I don't deserve to be alive. Come on, mm-hmm. How do I not follow up on that statement? That's huge.
Sure, sure.
Can I?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, some of it is if you remember, if you talk about this, if you think about it, then you are conditioned and programmed to end your life. But there's also the belief that if this has happened to me, if I'm involved in this, for some reason I deserved it, or and because it is very ugly, and you don't, it involves a lot of imagery that's very death-related and it's just all, everything you could imagine it is. And it was awful and horrible. And how does a kid, how does a child come out of that thinking, this planet is someplace I belong and someplace I want to be and someplace that I should be?
But Emily, was your Mormon faith maybe even though it's something you've walked away from and you've got an exit story and all this kind of stuff, and you mm-hmm. look back on it and realize the controlling nature of the whole thing, was your Mormon faith the thing that kept you alive?
It was.
Yeah.
It was. It was the thing that I finally realized was that the thing I was clinging to that gave me safety and a spiritual foundation and all of the stuff that did keep me alive was the very thing that had started it in the first place. And you know how ironic that is, that the thing that was, you know, in a lot of ways was killing me was the thing that was also keeping me alive. And I am very grateful for my, at this point, at this stage where I'm at now, I'm very grateful for all of it.
How did you find out that your dad was gay?
Well, I think I had seen things when I was little and seen him with men and little things that had gone on. And so it was kind of just something that had been logged away in the little back parts of my brain. And when I was about 10 years old, my parents were divorced, and it just started slowly dawning on me as he would bring boyfriends out to visit us, and he just had men with him all the time. And at some point, I always kind of knew because it was always kind of there, but one of my best friends told me we were at the swimming pool and we were talking about divorce and how bad it sucked to have parents who were divorced and to not know why, and she just got this look on her face, and I said, "Why, do you know why my parents got divorced?" And she said, "Yeah, it's because my dad's gay." "Yep." And it was the first time it was spoken out loud, so I was about 12 years old with a conversation with a friend when it was confirmed.
Wow. So your mom and dad, you know, didn't do the whole Brady Bunch thing, sit you down and go, "We just want to let you know that Mr. Brady is gay." Because actually, Mr. Brady was gay, but...
I know, right? No, they sat us down for the whole divorce talk. They sat us down with cookies, and it was Christmas time, and the tree was up, and we had just seen The Wiz, and it was this big family moment. And then it was, we can better support ourselves, support each other as friends, and no longer as husband and wife, and we're always going to be here for you, but Dad's not going to be here. And it was, there was never the explanation of why. It was just, we're going to get divorced.
But why, hold on, with any parents listening right now that are contemplating divorcing and then deciding when they're going to tell their kids, would you suggest that they do that at Christmas?
Absolutely not. They kind of want to, weirdly, at least my parents did, somehow think that if it's a birthday or Christmas or something, it's going to lessen the blow. But all it does is it ruins that holiday that happened on my birthday, too, with something else. And it's like, okay, so yeah, from now on, I have the association of this.
Yeah.
Like, don't do that. Wait.
Just wait.
On a Tuesday when nothing's happening.
Yeah, yeah. You just see the kid unwrapping a present, and it's the papers. It's the divorce papers.
Oh, and by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Or they take out Ken and Barbie, and they show them getting fighting. Uh-huh. Ken and Ken. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so tell me about your dad, because, you know, you still speak adoringly of him.
I do. I didn't for quite a while.
But hold on. But how can you speak adoringly of a dad when you're a girl who has daddy issues?
I don't know. I kind of, there's the pre, he was banished for about 15 years from my psyche after he had died, when I realized, because we had a very wonderful, close, incredible, amazing, very, very codependent relationship. And I, you know, now with the perspective that I have and being able to look back and see my life clearly, the way I do, the love that my father gave me early on really, truly is the thing, even more than the Mormon church. It's the love that my dad gave me that kept me alive through all of that childhood stuff, through losing him, through every other thing that's gone down. The foundation and the root that I had in me, knowing how loved I was bigger and deeper than everything else.
So the gay dad who dies of AIDS was able to permeate your soul with love greater than Joseph Smith.
Oh, absolutely.
It's probably a lousy way to say that, but I think that's, yeah.
No, or even in Satan. That's even a more dramatic statement. The dad, the mom, the whoever it is, if a child has that core center burning fire of I am loved, and they really know that, then everything else is just crap that's piled on top of it. But it's always kind of burning there. Not kind of, it's always burning there. And in me, at least, I feel so fortunate that it never truly went out. It was close, but it never was extinguished. And so that love maintained and got me through everything. Even after his death and when my everything fell apart for me with losing him was just was horrible. And then when I realized that, and again, ironically and weirdly, losing him was one of the best things that could have happened to me because I didn't have an identity outside of him, I was able to start rescuing myself and figuring out who Emily is without Gerald, who the girl is without the dad. And in order to do that, to disassociate myself from him and from, and then learning how to do that from the Mormon Church and from everything else, I needed to banish him. There were no pictures. I didn't think about him. I hated him. I was angry with him. I kind of burned through that for a while. And then that started kind of turning around as my mind and my heart healed and I grew up. And it was a huge thing for me to turn 42, which was the age that he died, and realize I didn't know nothing. You know, when you're younger, you think your parents know everything. And I was so angry at him for all the mistakes he made and for not having it figured out. And when I outlived my dad, that was huge. It was a big part of my being able to forgive.
But you know, you're saying that you, in order to break the codependency that you had, you know, the codependent relationship we had with your dad, you banished him for your life, you know, mentally and whatever else, for, mm-hmm. what did you say, 15 years?
I think roughly.
Roughly, okay.
Give or take.
But you ended up marrying your dad.
Oh, yeah. It was unfinished, that's for sure.
So, in that 15-year banishment or attempt to banish your father, mm-hmm. at what point in those 15 years did you marry a gay man?
I was 16 when my dad died, and I was just 25 when I married my ex-husband. And a lot of that, obviously, was serious unfinished business with my dad. And I, you know, another part of it is, and this is... more extensively written about in Dancing with Crazy, but I, when I was 24, I met the love of my life, who we were going to get married, was my best friend, was everything, and he got cancer, and I took care of him with his parents for 9 months, and he died. And during that time, the Mormon Church and my beliefs and my faith was so involved in that, and having faith that he would be healed, and all of these priesthood blessings, and the priesthood being a huge part of the Mormon Church. And I was told in blessing after blessing, and I, at that point, everything had been so insane in my life that I didn't trust anything that went on inside of me. If it was, you know, my own brain, my own heart, it was not to be trusted. I had to look outside of myself to a bishop or to a teacher, to a leader, to someone who was in authority over me in the church. And the priesthood was a huge part of that. And so I got blessing after blessing, was told, you know, he would be healed, and we would have this, and we'd have a family, and he was my eternal companion, and then he died, and then I was told my faith was the only thing that was going to keep us apart in the eternities, and from that point on, it was a test of my faith, and if I would be obedient and have faith and demonstrate that to God, then I would get to be with my eternal companion. So then here comes this sweet gay boy, and I'm told in a blessing that he's been provided for me. I don't have to marry him. He's been provided for me, and that God wants me to multiply and replenish the earth. So what am I going to turn around and not be obedient when I'm told if I'm not obedient, I don't get to be with the love of my life someday after this life? And I was a baby. I was, 24 years old. So I married him.
Wow.
And we tried really hard. We were really good friends until we got married.
If I had a nickel for every time I heard,
I know, right? Honey, take a number. we really tried. We tried, and we just failed miserably on all counts.
Yeah.
And we had no right to get married. We had such baggage, and I was straight, and he was gay, and we were, you know, blah 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 blah. But we had great kids.
Hold on. So the father of your children.
Uh-huh.
Is the gay man of which we speak.
He is the gay man of which we speak, yeah.
How is your life not up on the screen yet?
I'm working on the screenplay, I'm telling you. It is. It's fascinating. It's kind of the caution tale of what happens when you don't think. If you don't think for yourself and you let all the thinking be done, especially when it comes to God. When it comes to God or spirituality or religion, and you look outside yourself to somebody else, it is a train wreck waiting to happen. And hello, what you got? I got good stories to tell.
Yeah, well, so do I. But yeah, never mind. Okay, so this relationship you have with your dad.
Uh huh.
You know, there's such a beauty in it, and can you just take us back to the day that he died, because I want to know where you were, what was going on in your mind, what you saw.
We had been out of town. When a baby grows, when someone's sick, when someone is changing rapidly physically and you see it in front of your face, it goes by, you don't even notice the changes. But we had been gone for a couple of weeks out of town when he really, really went downhill. So he was staying at our house. We came back home, and he was this little, wasted away little old man, and I had no way of emotionally handling that, and I started visibly, obviously falling, just completely falling apart. So my mom, while they were trying to get things set up for kind of a hospice situation in our house, sent me and me and my one brother and my sister to go stay with one of my mother's best friends. Well, just while they could get the house put up, my other brother refused to leave, so he was the only one that was there. So I was staying with my friends, my mother's friend, and my mom called and said he's going downhill really rapidly. My grandma had arrived, and we were not going to be coming home until he was dead. And I didn't even know where to place that. I was so in shock, and my little system had no way of even processing that I was never going to see this man that was the sun and the moon and the stars to me ever again. And he wasn't able to speak. I remember sitting in a little kind of closet off of their kitchen with the phone, and I asked her to put the phone up to his ear, and I just talked to him, and I told him how much I loved him and how grateful I was to him, and asked him if he was ever able to show me any way that he was still around me to please do so, and that I'm just so grateful he was my dad. And I said, goodbye, I love you. And that was a little obsession I had when I was little. I had a fear of our house burning down when I was little, so I had to obsessively say, I love you every night in case we died, because I wanted I love you to be the last thing that we ever said to each other. And so I love you was the last thing that I said to my father, which then he opened his eyes, and she said that he smiled and closed his eyes, gave him his final smile, and that became the title of her book, Goodbye, I Love You. It was from my last words to my dad. And so I said goodbye to him over the phone, and we came home. He died. I think that he died the next day, and we went home, and I plunged into a lot of darkness and a lot of depressed years after that.
Okay. Oh, sorry. I'm entranced in your story. I should be. I forgot I was on radio. Emily Pearson, actress, producer, ex-Mormon, author of Dancing with Crazy, and here's a lady whose life I don't think anybody will really ever get. DancingWithEmily.com is a website you want to go to, by the way, DancingWithEmily.com.
And actually, my Amazon is out of my book right now, so it can be purchased through just the main homepage on DancingWithCrazy.com. You can just get it directly from me.
By the way, Emily is a, how do I describe you? Because I don't know you that well, but I want to try. Messy spirituality is a good uh-huh. phrase. And you are just a really authentic cheeky pants. No, that's pathetic.
Cheeky pants is the best. I will take it. I love that.
Your cheek comes through in your writing, and I think it's fantastic. You're very
Thank
accomplished.
You so much.
When you decided to throw out Mormonism, mm-hmm. first of all, it wasn't. You know, it wasn't just wake up one day, have a coffee, and go, okay, that's it, I'm done. I mean, it was, you know, this is all, like anything, these things are a long, drawn-out process.
Well, it actually kind of was more for me. Now, I mean, obviously, all of the things that I had been through was a big, fat, hello, get the hell out right. for myself. But it really was. I was sitting at my desk at work, and I was still very, very Mormon, and I had the thought of this man that I was dating. I wonder if he's the one I'm supposed to marry. I've got to get a blessing and find out. And I had the thought of, I need to get a blessing to find out. And I had this full-body panic attack. I held the sides of my desk, and I watched as dominoes went down, and all of a sudden, everything I had ever believed was gone in one fell swoop. It was like just wiped off the table, taken from me. Blessings, the priesthood, the Mormon Church, the Book of Mormon, Jesus, God, everything was just gone. And I sat there at my desk just sobbing, and then realization after realization after realization of what I had done to myself, and never thinking, and the choices I had made for myself on what somebody else always had said for me.
I am sure that someone along the way has said to you or tried to say to you something like, yeah, but Emily, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I mean that literally. Like, don't throw baby Jesus out with this fact that you've,
sure.
You know, you, I mean, Jesus is still Jesus. It was the Mormon church that was wonky. It was your, you know, the relationships you were in that
absolutely.
Was wonky. So did you ever think after throwing everything out, ooh, maybe I should have kept something?
Yeah, well, I'll kind of catch up from there. I was so angry at God because of blah, 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 the whole list we just talked about and stuff we haven't even discussed. So there were several years leading up to all that where it was time to pray at night, and I would get this wave of, ugh, I have to pray. I'd kneel down, I'd say my prayers, go to bed. So finally, after I had my big, oh, it's gone, I was getting ready for bed and had the thought of, ugh, it's time to pray. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I don't ever have to pray again. So I didn't kneel down by my bed. I sat on my bed, Indian style, with my hands out, and I said, okay, are you there? Who are you? And I was immediately flooded with the biggest love I have ever felt. I saw these incredible colors. It was the most exquisite experience I've ever had.
Whoa, hold on. Are you telling me that after you chucked out religion, you had a relationship with God?
I did, yeah.
I'm using vernacular. You had a tangible encounter with the Creator. How's that?
yeah, that's a very dramatic way of saying it. But yeah, I had a cool moment, and that love said to me, "You want to know who I am? This is who I am, and there is nothing you can ever do to be separate from me. I am a part of you. You are a part of me, and you never have to do anything to earn me, and you can never do anything to be separate from me." And I thought, oh, that's way cool. And then I had to go take 5 years to be pissed off at the church and all of the, because my experience in my religion had warped so much my experience of what God meant, what Jesus meant, what everything meant. And so I had to kind of really, I kind of took this beautiful, amazing thing and said, can you hold on just a second? And set it over there and went and I had to go be angry. And after a while, I started realizing that I really, really, really missed spirituality. And I didn't even know what that meant anymore. And I was very afraid of it because it had been such a wild goose chase, crazy, crazy thing for me. And so I slowly started dipping my toes in, and people would come into my life that were so alive and innocent and sweet and faithful, and I could remember when I had been like that. And just little things, little, you know, that's how it works, a song, a book, a quote, a something. And I started, when I finally realized that it wasn't so much God that I didn't trust or faith or all of that, it was myself. It was my, because ultimately I chose to believe what I chose to believe. I made the choices. I chose, you know, all of that. And when I finally realized all of that had given me, you know, kind of like I said at the beginning of this, it all of this forced me into a relationship in order for me to live through it and to heal through it and to not just be okay, but really, really leave it all behind and be a healthy, healed human being. I had to develop a relationship with a part of me, like I said, that's indestructible. And it's that when I finally, like, really grabbed a hold of that and held on to it and learned and recognized that that is what I trust and that is who has the connection to everything, then all of a sudden it didn't have to be something that I was afraid of. All of a sudden this God energy, and it took me a long time to even be okay with the word God. For a while, if someone said God, I wanted to just, like, hit him with heavy furniture. And it took me a long time to make peace with that word, and it has nothing to do with the source of love that my soul has actually come from. It was the word God because of the long list of reasons why. And so it stopped being something that I was afraid of or angry at, and it's just kind of this really beautiful, magical ocean to just swim in and play in and eat up, and I love it now.
Why didn't you become a Buddhist?
Why didn't I become a Buddhist?
Yeah, because that's trendy with you actor types.
I'm drawn to Buddhism a little bit. The last several years, I've been really, really drawn to Native American stuff. I personally have no desire to become something else, to assign myself to a movement, a cause, a church, a religion, to say, I am now a Buddhist. I was Mormon, but now I'm a Buddhist, or now I'm this. I'm just me. I'm just Emily, and I take truth and beauty and light and life and magic from everywhere it presents itself.
Okay, what do you think about Jesus?
That's a really good question, and I can't say I have Jesus all figured out. Jesus was kind of one thing that, because there was a lot of Jesus imagery and Jesus stuff used in the abuse when I was little, that is something that I kind of had to work through and really heal early on. And Jesus was something that I always, the concept and the personhood of Jesus when I was Mormon was my everything. And so kind of reclaiming all of this and going, well, now what is this thing about Jesus? I very much love, this is going to sound so weird and it's so new agey and it's so like, I don't have the words to say what I want to say, how I want to say it. The energy of the soul, the entity that is Jesus, I still feel with me all the time. I have a very close relationship with that, a very, very deep love. I don't, at this point in time, I don't feel the way I used to feel when I would say, you know, I was a Christian and Jesus had to suffer and die for my sins in the way that I was taught. I have a whole very different relationship with healing and love and all of that with what Jesus means to me. Did that even come close to answering?
Yeah, no. This is good. I'm tracking along with this quite nicely.
And I there's so much I don't have figured out. And the thing that I love the most now is that I don't have to have answers. I don't have to get up in front of the congregation the first Sunday of every month and tell them that I know it's true. I have my truth right now, and it always morphs and grows. And I love the questions now much more than I love the answers. I do feel like I have found some answers, but I love the questions.
When you and I were younger, we would try to find people who believed in the same things, and that's who we chose to hang out with.
Yeah.
And now, we try, or at least I do, but I'm thinking you do as well. I'm trying to put you into my category here. I'm more attracted to people that ask the same questions, not to people that have the same answers.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great way of putting it, and it's true. And I still get very put off at people who have the answers, because I still live in Salt Lake. It's the people that had the exact answers that I used to think that I had that kind of clobbered me over the head my whole life. I'm still in the middle of that, so it's not my preferred crowd, that's for sure. So I will agree with that 100%. I love people hanging with people that ask the same questions. The questions are exciting.
Yeah, but you know what? It also gets a bit waffly, too. I mean, every once in a while, I get a little tired of swimming around in the deep end, and I want to grab onto the wall, to the shore, to the, I don't know, whatever. Because...
Well, that's when you swim to the shore and you sit in your boat and you do, you know, take a shot of tequila, drink some shaka, drink wine, whatever you want, and go watch a silly movie and go do whatever you want. And then when it's time to put on your suit, you jump back in. Yeah. Or you skinny dip or whatever it looks like.
Easy.
It's just fun.
Can you, I realized there was a part of your story that we didn't go to, and I think I want to go to it, although after we go to it, I will probably regret going to it. So let's go to the part of your story.
Maybe I'm not going to answer.
Ask her. Let's go to you puking in the toilet of a courting polygamist. Which, by the way, would be a great line in a punk song. I'm just saying.
Wouldn't it? Oh, how much time do we have left?
Well, you couldn't.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was right when I was in the middle. I had just started, and this is, you know, we can talk for days and days, and maybe we should another time, or I'll be back on here. But I had just remembered and was really in the depths of, for the first time in my life, dealing with the abuse that had happened when I was little. So right around that time, I was a complete messy disaster. And a friend of my mother's contacted her and said, I have this friend who's a healer, and I really think that he would be a wonderful person for Emily to meet. So So I met him on a Monday. Fast forward to the next Friday, during that course of a week, he was a polygamist. I was supposed to be his fourth wife. I was supposed to be he was supposed to plant me with his seed, and I was supposed to have the chosen child that was going to lead the people across the country. And I was a complete mess, and it was probably one of the worst weeks of my life. It was insane. It was completely insane. And as far as funny, crazy, you won't believe the stories to tell, it's awesome. It was a really fun chapter to write. I'm glad it's over. I'm glad something in me had this little moment of, I maybe should think about this.
Yeah.
That was one of the first times I thought and went, huh.
Hmm. Not so much.
Maybe I need to...
run?
Screaming. Yes.
I like the line, plant me with his seed. That's a great line.
Right? It's like, no, you don't want to just like, let's just... never mind. I was going to be cheeky and...
yep, that's in the book, folks.
Well, I will censor myself. But that's a fun chapter. That's a good one. But yeah, it was, you know, it's kind of like everything that came up in my face screaming at me that just about destroyed me was everything that's taught me how to, you know, you learn how, I learned how to protect myself and trust myself and listen to myself and how to not be crazy by having crazy in my face and by learning what it feels like to not protect myself and to not trust myself and to not listen to myself. And all of these experiences, again, brought me back to the me that I have now that I will never let go of. And I will, you know, we can look outside of ourselves in the conversations with the fellow questioners. We can look to other people for their stories and for their advice and for motivation and inspiration. But that better be after, during, and before you check in with yourself. Not before. Check in with yourself. Check in with myself. I will never again look to someone outside of me to tell me anything, if it doesn't, especially if it doesn't jive with what I got going on in my own head and my heart now. But when it comes to God and spirituality, it's all from me.
DancingWithEmily.com is the website you want to go to. The book is called Dancing with Crazy. You can go to that website and get the book from Emily, because Amazon is out. Just got to wrap this up because we got to get the Starsky. You know what I'm saying?
How totally awesome is that? I had a scar. I loved him.
Yeah, I did too, and that's just weird. Your mom.
Mm-hmm.
Does she? Have you had any sort of sit down talks with your mom? First of all, your mom's still a Mormon?
She is.
Okay. So you're not a Mormon. Your mom's still a Mormon. Your mom is still like this incredible Mormon author, poet kind of thing. And especially in the gay Mormon world, because she really wrote stuff that.
Yeah, my mom's still a Mormon because she established a platform many, many, many years ago, decades ago, from which she could speak and be noisy and affect change within the system that very few people have the opportunity to do.
Right.
It's not necessarily because she has this burning testimony that it's the only true anything, but she's very much been an activist for women and an activist for gays for a very, very, very long time.
And you guys were on Geraldo and Regis and Kathy Lee, right? Is that what I
thought? We were, yep, yeah.
Would your mom not be a little miffed at the fact that, you know, some of your story kind of looks at your mom, and you might look, you know, the rest of us as outsiders would look at your mom and go, "What? Why didn't you? How come that? Whoa! I don't even know know what to say." But it was your mom ticked at any of the stuff you've written?
Sure. I wouldn't say ticked. I wouldn't say she's, you know, broken. Faces over anything, but it's been really challenging because I think for the first time when our whole life was public under her control, you know, it was under her control and she could, what was shared publicly was what she wanted to have shared publicly. And then I began sharing publicly things that she clearly were very painful for her to have shared publicly.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this stuff, you know, that went on, she never had any idea of. She had no idea until long after the fact. And so it's not like she she knew people were abusing me. She didn't know all the stuff my dad was exposing me to. She didn't know most of it until after the fact. And so it wasn't like she was sitting back eating bonbons and, you know,
serving tea to the Satanists.
Sure. But there's also something about the older generation when things are just, you know, my mom's generation, they didn't ever really talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
There's no way, how do you, when you cannot begin to wrap your brain around something existing at all in the first place, let alone to your child or to your anything, and because her life has been crazy and painful and all of that, you reach a point where you just can't. Like, we all have a ceiling of pain that you just, once you hit, you can't go past it. And I think my life has blown through her ceiling of anything she's ever been able to handle. But she's never stopped loving me, and she's never stopped being supportive of me.
Well, I am a little freaked out by your story. I am, this sounds a little trite because it's from a distance, but I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you.
Well, there's a survivor thing in you, and there's a...
I don't take that as a trite thing at all. I mean that. I said that in a kind of smart-ass way because that's who I am. But truly, thank you very much.
I don't know if you heard me say this maybe at the start, but the three things I admire most in human beings are vulnerability, authenticity, and teachability. And you strike me as someone that has the trifecta.
Well, thank you. I that's important to me. Mm-hmm. Those three things, actually, I think are very important.
I really appreciate you sharing your guts on our show. Thank you. Thank you very much, Emily.
Thanks for caring and for wanting to hear about my guts.
And I still don't know how I really found out about you. I mean, it's not as though I saw you on Geraldo.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't born then.
Oh, thanks. Just end this on making me feel old, Manu.
I'm such a jerk. I was totally born then. Anyway.
I think you're great, and I really like talking to you.
So thanks. Stop.
This has been very fun.
Stop. Tell me more.
Stop.
Emily, listen, open invite on our show. If you ever want to sell anything, you're welcome to come back.
And, I'd love it. I have so much going on. This is just the tip of some iceberg. So we'll have many more fun conversations if you're open to it. I'd love it.
Thank you, Emily. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Emily Pearson, dancingwithemily.com is where you want to go. Wow, what a story. Incredible stuff there. Short break. When we come back, Starsky.
It's hard to find quality guest speakers these days. If they're interesting, they're usually expensive. And if they're cheap, they're usually boring. Well, here's someone who's both expensive and boring. Drew Marshall is a high school dropout who tried to become a pro football player but didn't make it. He then tried to become a firefighter and didn't make it. Now he's trying to become a stand-up comic. Good luck with that, Mr. Marshall. But if you're looking for someone who's unpredictable, incredibly honest, provocative, genuine, then we've got the right guy. Everyone seems to be an expert on something these days. Why not book someone who's an expert on nothing, except how to be brutally honest about yourself and your faith? To book Drew Marshall as your guest speaker, go to drewmarshall.ca.